It's sports time, even though it's Tuesday. It's still the first day of the working week. Time to check in with our sports commentator, Brian Waddle. Evening, Brian.
G'day, Todd. How are you?
Nice to speak with you. All right, well, plenty to talk about for the long weekend. Some deserved honours for sporting personalities in the King's Birthday Honours.
Yeah, I didn't see your name featuring there, Todd, but I'm sure your time will come. But it's nice to have a look at those awards. There are people who don't give the same credence to honours like this, and that's their choice, I guess. But I'm one who likes to acknowledge those who've done well and have earned their awards. And you look at Wayne Smith, what he has done over his lifetime, not only in rugby, but in his charitable work as well, and the easy nature that he goes about his business, and his, you know, feeling and empathy for other people rather than himself. And I think he's a thoroughly deserving man to receive a knighthood, Sir Wayne Smith, and I'm sure he will carry it well. But you look at some of the other names who appeared on the list, and there's a lot of sporting people, and at the risk of missing some of them out, and I looked through many of them, but the ones that I know from personal experience, of course, Andy Leslie has done a lot over a long period of time and received another King's Honour, which is well deserved for what he does in the local community in Petone. Yeah, people outside the Wellington region may not know a lot of these things, but they know their own people in their own areas who work so hard for the community. Amy Satterthwaite, who's contributed a lot to cricket and is continuing to do so, I'm sure, by way of coaching in future months. And a name that struck me, and you sort of don't often think of horse racing people being involved, particularly jockeys, but Opie Botson, who's been around horse racing, don't know him at all, but I've seen what he does around the horse racing world, and he's a highly respected jockey, and Opie Botson was another one. But, you know, all those people who got awards deserve them, and, you know, we can look around our own community, people who don't get the same recognition but probably deserve it over a long period of time. Also are people who are worthy of acknowledgement. So, you know, while there are some people who don't see the value in the honours, I'm one who supports them. Fortunately, I've been a recipient, so I suppose you have to accept them at face value. But I just think it was wonderful that so many people have been acknowledged for their contribution to the community, sport, or whatever they have delivered.
Yep, good words. You won't see my name. Easy to find, though, Brian, in the Z, so, yeah, it's quite easy when it's all. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Super Rugby.
Yeah, it's the W's are well. Yeah, the W's are well down the list, too.
Well, yeah, you've been there, done that. You've got, yeah, very deserving. Super Rugby into the business end now. Brian, Hurricanes arguably face the biggest hurdle in the playoffs?
Yeah, well, they've got to go away, which in itself is not an easy task. They've got to go, well, they may well be on the same plane as the Warriors because they're going to Brisbane as well, to Canberra. And that's where the Hurricanes are heading. And they worked pretty hard to get to the position that they are. Not that the game last weekend really mattered to any great degree, but I think the momentum that they gained from beating the Crusaders, they'll celebrate that for a long time. Beating the Crusaders is something that most sides are looking to do these days, and that's what they achieved. But they've got to go to Canberra to play the Brumbies. And, of course, they beat the Brumbies the last time they played, 6 weeks ago, I think, 32-27. And so now they've got the hard part to do. The other three teams, of course, they're at home, and the expectation is that the Blues, the Chiefs and the Crusaders will all come through comfortably to the next round.
Yeah. Dane Coles farewelled his home ground in his own distinctive, niggly sort of way. He reminds me a lot of Sean Fitzpatrick. He was a bit like that too, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, there are some people who, you know, they're sort of likeable rogues to a certain extent. You know, there are some that you would look at and think, oh, he's a fool. But Dane Coles has always been a little bit like that, and it was so nice to see. I don't know that it looks great for rugby to see two guys standing there, look, shaping up, and one with his fist clenched and ready to go. But, you know, Dane Coles has been a character. He's been a great contributor. And I think Cody Taylor and he were at loggerheads. They're old mates from way back. I think the early stages of their career, they played with and against each other. But it was nice to see at the end the two of them having a laugh and having a push and shove afterwards, because, you know, those are the sorts of things that sometimes just make the difference. A lot of sport these days, because of codes of conduct and all the rules around them, don't lead to characters coming to the forefront. And I think Dane Coles would be regarded as a character, and he showed it. And it was a good chance for him to farewell his crowd at the Westpac Stadium, and they went there. Well, it's a Sky Stadium now, isn't it? They went there to farewell him, and yeah, it was a lovely finish to his career. He may be seen there again, but certainly not in the Hurricanes colours.
Yeah, quite niggly, a bit like Shane Warne in a sense, I suppose. But
yeah, you know, very much.
Yeah, was it a surprise, Brian, that the Fijian Drua made the last eight?
Yeah, to a certain extent, it was, because I suppose my expectation was that we would see better from the Australian franchises. Well, they certainly were disappointing, apart from the Brumbies. And I also expect the Highlanders to be a little more competitive than they were, but they finished off a woeful season. So of any of the sides that could have come through, the Drua did an outstanding job. They beat the Reds 41-17. They have won six games, which isn't a bad effort. They won most of them at home. Five they won at home. Mm. One was away from home. And I think that that is going to be the telling factor, that at home they are near unbeatable because of the crowd support, the conditions they play and what they get used to. They're really going to have to pick it up coming to New Zealand to play in New Zealand conditions, because that is going to be a very tough assignment. And they've got the Crusaders. Well, they beat the Crusaders in Fiji last time. This one is totally different. But well done. I think it's going to add something to the Super Rugby competition, and we look forward to see what they can do. But a very busy Friday and Saturday night. I hope it's a cool evening so that I don't feel too bad about sitting indoors in front of the fire watching a full parade of Super Rugby.
Yeah, rugby's not designed to be played in 32 degrees and 90% humidity, really. But
well, it is in Fiji.
Yeah. Speaking of rugby, too, a narrow win for the All Black under-20s over Australia. That was the curtain raiser, wasn't it, in Wellington, heading to the under-20 championships in South Africa. Seems far from convincing, though.
Yeah, well, 1918, they managed to squeak home. They played the Aussies previously and lost that by 34 for 28. The concern for me is that it's not often that you see a New Zealand pack being pushed around the park like this under-19 side was. Now, whether it was their first choice forward pack or not, I don't know, but they were demolished by a very strong-looking Australian contingent. And that is the concern, that they weren't convincing. Yes, they managed to pick themselves up and hold on to their lead, but they will be up against, in particular in their pool in South Africa, Wales, France and Japan. Now, I don't imagine Japan will have the same scrummaging capacity, but it'll be interesting to know what Wales and France are able to bring, because generally they are sides that can put together good, solid forward packs. But I was very interested in seeing that Australian side. They didn't have quite the same finesse in the back line, and that was where the under-20s performed. They were brilliant in the attacking movements. Mm. The Australians weren't quite able to capitalise on their scrum strength. I suppose you've got to look at it. I mean, the game's not always about scrumming, but, you know, sometimes if you can get that dominance, then you'll look for that opportunity, and the Australians certainly did, and exposed New Zealand. So I guess they'll be doing a little bit of work to try and improve that before they head off towards South Africa.
And let's talk about the Warriors. You mentioned them. This is our year. Warriors fans appear emboldened by their current form.
Yeah, well, they're starting to talk more about top four. Whether or not that's an opportunity is a bit further down the line. But certainly they are giving what their fans wanted. They've already surpassed where they were last year in terms of points. And to beat the Dolphins as they did, 30-8, was quite a convincing victory. I've got to say, I'm not necessarily a Warriors fan myself, but I have taken the opportunity to have a look at some of their play, and they are a much more organised, cohesive unit, and they have attacking potential, which could well take them up to the top four. That's, as I say, a fair way off. They've got a tough one this week. They've got a side that's placed one better than them on the NRL ladder, the Raiders, who beat the West Tigers 20-19 in the last game that they played. But to the Raiders is what they're up against this week. So we're going to have a lot of interest in what's going on in Canberra, the league team there Friday night, the rugby team there on Saturday night. There'll be a lot of New Zealanders, I'm sure, across there yelling for both of our teams. But I think that the Warriors have certainly dispelled many of the concerns that people had that, you know, they were not going to be a force. Well, they've shown that they are a force. They can compete with some of these sides. And even in recent matches that they've lost, they've been close to winning. So, you know, it's exciting to think that they have a side that's well coached, that is, prepared to play a good, attacking, entertaining brand of league. And, of course, they've had injury problems too, which doesn't help. But I suppose you look at sport these days, what side doesn't have injury problems? When you look at the rugby, you know, many of those super sides have got major injury worries. And, you know, you look at a list of some of the players who are injured, and there's a test squad due to be named in the next couple of weeks or so. So it'll be interesting to see how many of those players have got over their injuries and are ready to come forward.
I watched the final of the netball on Sunday. What a game that was. I know the Mystics, it looked sort of one-sided. The Mystics took that premiership title. You reckon that was predictable, Brian?
Yeah, it was. They played some of the best netball this year. In fact, it was a bit more one-sided than I imagined that it would be. 74-56. I thought that the Stars were a slightly better side. Being a Pulse fan myself, I thought that they were probably more likely to challenge the Mystics. But I think in terms of the performances of the sides this year, the consistency that they've shown after the early rounds, the Mystics were always up near the top, and they proved difficult to knock over. And, you know, they've got some very good players, and I'm sure Nolene Tairua, who was there watching with her co-selectors, who has a team to name tomorrow, or a squad to name tomorrow, I think, to head off to the championships in South Africa. She, I'm sure, will be impressed with the quality of what they're doing. When you get down to the sort of finished article, some of these players have played a lot of top-level netball. My concern probably is that it's only homegrown. We're not playing against the Australians as we used to, and whether or not that has an impact on our players and their ability to develop themselves for big tournaments, I'm not too sure. I'd like to see that kind of competition, but of course that all costs money, and sometimes the money's hard to come by in sport these days, so we just have to live with what we've got. And certainly the people have been turning out full houses for the netball. Great stuff.
I don't know how you defend Grayson Weeke. I mean, she's just amazing. Under the incredible. What a player. She reminds me of... Reminds me of Irene van Dijk, you know, that sort of player, almost undefendable.
Well, they're so tall too, aren't they? I mean, I can't believe how tall they have to be to be able to compete. But it's not only that ability to score, it's their skills in receiving the ball, because they have to receive the ball under the most immense pressure on many occasions. And I've spoken about this previously, when you look at some of the body contact that goes on. Well, Grace Mweke, she's solidly built and strong enough to hold her own against some of the defenders that she's up against. Some of them are more slightly built, but they, you know, they have to have great ball skills, and they do. And, you know, she's just one of a number of them. Outstanding.
A-League final not as expected in that outcome.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised. Others might think it was a fair call, but it was a 6-1 final, and that was Central Coast Mariners over Melbourne City. Well, Melbourne City basically dominated the pool play right the way through the competition. Mm. They were the strength. They were the side that was the one to beat, and they had a lot to contend with in terms of the pressure that they were put under on a lot of occasions against many of the sides. But you just have to look at the initial table. I think they won by the top of the table by something like 10 points. And so they were fairly consistent in terms of what they were able to achieve. Central Coast Mariners, well, it was interesting. I think the Phoenix played them, might have beaten them once, if I recall, early in the season, and might have had a draw or a loss to them. They played them twice. But to win a grand final 6-1, that is demolishing a very, very good side. And I must admit that I didn't expect it. I gave them a chance, but my own personal choice was Melbourne City just because of what they'd achieved to get there. So, a good quality final. Central Coast Mariners coming out on top 6-1.
We found some cricket to talk about now that the IPL's done and dusted. People may not have known this. England and Ireland played a test. The England cricketers beat Ireland in 3 days, I think by 10 wickets in the end. A bit of a build-up to the Ashes. Was it a build-up, really? A bit of a training run, maybe?
Yeah, well, I think it's England doing the right thing, ensuring that the sides like Ireland, like the Netherlands, like Afghanistan, some of those lesser-known sides, get an opportunity to play. It was always going to be one-sided. I think what surprised me was the fight that the Irish showed in the second innings, because they were challenged with making England bat a second time. England batted, got through to 500, dominated quite convincingly through Ollie Pope and Ben Duckett, a double century, and Pope and Duckett getting another 100. But I was left with the thought that it was England preparing themselves in conditions that they're going to put out against the Australians. It looks as though they are going to have flat, lifeless pitches where the batsmen are going to get the chance to dominate. You look at the way the England bowlers had to struggle in the second innings. Admittedly, it wasn't their frontline attack, but they found a new young pace bowler, Josh Tong, or Tung as it's spelt, but they pronounce it Tong, and he looked to be a lively competitor. 5 wickets for him at Lord's on debut, but of course they didn't have Jimmy Anderson, they didn't have Wood, and it was a second string attack.
Yeah,
but
Broad tore through them though, didn't he? Broad tore through them,
yes,
in the first innings, yeah.
Yeah, Broad, that's right. The interesting thing, of course, is that they've now lost Jack Leach. News today that he has a stress fracture, and he, of course, is their spin option, and had been a pretty effective spin option. Where they go from there, because spin has not been something they've looked at to any great degree, they may well go back to somebody like Moen Ali. But it makes for interesting preparation for the Ashes. But of course, as of tonight, the World Test Championship starts at the Oval. And of course, we get a chance to see the Australian side up against India as New Zealand's Test Match Championship goes somewhere else. The mace that they worked so hard to get a couple of years ago will now be either Australia's or India's. Don't know who I'm going to back. I think I... slight favouritism with the Australians. They seem to play these games a lot harder, but you know, it's going to be a tight one. It'll be interesting to see what sort of pitch they prepare at the Oval for them. So yeah, plenty of cricket coming up the next 2 months. I'm going to have sleepless nights, I know.
Let's finish on Formula One, the World Formula One Drivers' Championship, a bit of a procession for Red Bull.
Yeah, Max Verstappen, clearly the best driver going around at the moment. Sometimes you wonder, and if you don't know the ins and outs of motorsport, and I certainly don't, you watch it because you like to see a contest, but you wonder sometimes whether it's the car or the driver. Well, you put a good driver in a good car, the fast car, he is winning races, you know, like 10, 15, 20 seconds. That's quite a distance in a GP event. And Verstappen is doing it. His co-driver for Red Bull, Sergio Perez, is also driving a fast car. He didn't quite make it. The interesting thing from my point of view was that Lewis Hamilton and George Russell, who've been sort of lingering behind Verstappen in the Mercedes team, were a little bit more competitive. Now, whether or not they've got a quicker car and are going to be a bit more competitive in some of the other races, I must admit that I'm not a great fan of watching processions. I think it was a predictable result. Verstappen quite clearly is an outstanding driver and manages to drag every extra ounce, if you can say that, I suppose, millimetre of speed, whatever they put speed down to, and he does it brilliantly. I love sitting them in the cockpit of their cars before they start the race. The concentration, you know, their eyes are so fixed. You know, you can see they've only got one thing on their mind, and you know that I'm sure is an important part of motorsport. You know, the mind control, the ability to get into a position and concentrate for that period of time and the pace that they're going at. So I hope it becomes a little bit closer and not quite the procession that it has been, but, you know, that's motorsport.
Thanks, Brian. Always great to catch up.